Okay, we've been getting through this agenda quite speedily. We've reached the general discussion. And I did want to welcome Commissioner Holtzmiller to our commission. I think he's getting settled in. But Commissioner Holtzmiller, would you like to say a few things about your background?
Well, thank you and for welcoming me, and thanks for everybody. I've received some calls and emails and stuff. And just grew up around here. Probably when I really got started in the resource deal was got involved with the conservation district in the late 80s, early 90s. And at that time, then Governor Locke approached us about writing a model watershed management plan for Assotin Creek, and we actually ended up with the first written plan in the state. And you know, having been in the logging industry and saw what the spotted owl had done to the coast, and realizing what it was, what a profound effect it was going to have on the ranching and all sorts of things in this part of the world, we ended up getting heavily involved, and it's turned it into a win-win situation. It's been a profoundly positive effect around here because we took a lot of really crappy feedlots and got guys some nice feedlots and helped the fish counts dramatically in Assotin Creek, and have just stayed involved pretty extensively ever since, and was involved after the inception of the Snake River Recovery Board. I chaired that for the first 4 years, and it was really interesting. And there again, having been a lifelong hunter, I fished some, but not a whole lot. But fishing in this part of the world is a big economic thing. And talking about jet boats earlier, Lewiston-Clarkston Valley is the jet boat capital of the world, because that's about what you need if you're going to get around on these rivers over here. But no, hopefully I can live up to what needs to be done. It's going to be a really, really steep learning curve because you guys address so many issues from part of the state that on the west side. I've been over there some, but not totally versed. But this part of the world, I'm fairly versed on the resource issues. So hopefully just keep my mouth shut and my ears open for a while. There again, it's going to be a steep learning curve, but thanks for the welcome.
Thank you. We really do appreciate your interest, and fresh blood is always a good thing on the commission, even if there is a steep learning curve. Okay, other items to discuss? I thought I'd give the director an opportunity to give us an additional information. What's the latest on the potential government shutdown?
Yeah, and also, Madam Chair, Commissioner Smith, if there's any other news on the other appointments or any movement for new members.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Director Anderson?
Madam Chair, this is Deputy Director Storr.
Oh, okay. Did Phil leave us?
Well, he just stepped out, but I've got something I could fill the time with.
Okay, go ahead. Thank you.
Welcome to new Commissioner Holtzmiller, and I work for Phil, and so if there's anything I can do to help you get situated and established, feel free to give me a call.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to talk just briefly about follow-up status on follow-up to the blue sheet that was passed regarding the establishment of a youth council with the commission, and then maybe ask for a little bit of help from the commissioners. After the passage of the blue sheet, where the purpose was to develop a program to encourage youth participation in conservation and outdoor recreation, I came back and made a call to a man by the name of Greg Williamson, who Commissioner Smith had been in touch with from the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instructions, and got a return call back from Greg just this morning. And I talked to Greg about the process that I had laid out for the commission when you passed the blue sheet. First step would be to select a small group of maybe about six 14 to 18-year-olds and ask them to come in and help us evaluate and recommend potential focus areas for a youth council. So not pull together a large, ready-to-go council, but take some steps into scoping out what a council might do should we decide to pull the larger group together. And Greg liked that idea. He thought it was a good approach. And told me about a group they have. They have a legislative youth advisory council, about 24 young people that get together and provide advice to the legislature on various policy issues, a pretty wide-ranging set of issues. And his suggestion was to try to use that process to establish a separate group that would be focused on recreation and conservation issues. And it just so happened that he was recruiting for new youth council members. The tricky part or the tough part is that recruitment ends next Tuesday. But his suggestion or his offer was if we could come up with, six, seven young people that would apply, and I'm getting the application form together sort of as we speak. And in the application, I think it's fairly simple. They could indicate an interest in wildlife issues and fish and recreation outdoor issues that then we could, have the participants in this initial scoping group and set up a workshop in the near future and queue up some ideas for these young folks to evaluate and give us some feedback on. So my request to the commissioners is if you know of someone between 14 and 16, and it'd be good to get a nice spread across the state, who would be interested in attending a workshop in the next couple of months, if you could have them contact me, and I could get them an application, and we could get them in the process. If that doesn't work, if I can't pull that together, then I've got some other ideas about how to go out and try to recruit some kids to participate. But I thought I'd try and take advantage, even though we've got a short time frame here, take advantage of this process that OSPI has. And then Greg, OSPI, has also offered to continue to help us in terms of advising. They're sending me a number of articles and documents from other states where they've done similar things, so I'll be able to bring those to the Big Tent Committee next time we meet. So, again, if you know someone who's between 14 and 18 and is interested in playing a role to assist us in developing opportunities for youth, just let me know.
Great. Yeah, Madam Chair, Commissioner Smith.
Yes. Commissioner Smith.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'm kind of ailing here, so my voice is cracking. But thanks for following up with that with Greg. As you probably sense, he's a dynamo when he gets moving. I think this is a good plan, starting off with what you said, like six. The one suggestion of a person that jumps out, I think we all remember when we were doing the lighted knocks. There was the daughter of one of the folks who was very active in that, and she'd actually, I don't know if it was a Boone and Crockett, but she, do you remember she passed around a massive critter that, or I don't know, it was a mule deer or a whitetail that she did with a bow. So I was very impressed by her, and I don't know if we could track her down. I imagine we have her father's name somewhere because he did testify. So that would be one my initial thought, because I thought she would have been an ideal candidate when she talked.
Mm-hmm. This is Commissioner Caney.
Commissioner Caney?
I can give, it's Jim Sutton, and it was his daughter. I can give him a call.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, I thought about her too, Commissioner Smith. Yeah, she was energized and interested. And
mm-hmm. Is she from over by UJ?
Yeah, Spokane. Her dad's in the Northwest Wildlife Council. He's president.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Again, Joy, just really appreciative of you following up on this.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Joe, you might also check with Hunter Ed.
Right.
Because I would think that they'd have lots of names for you and maybe some recommendations.
I'll do that, Commissioner. And again, if you have anybody you know that has that level of interest, just email me their names and I'll follow up.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Schmitten.
Commissioner Schmitten, go ahead.
You know, this is going to take a pretty mature young person, and I was impressed during our Wolf hearings with the daughter of the attorney from, I think it was Natural Resources Conservation. It was a conservation group. Remember, she testified mm-hmm. twice, and it was a very mature young
right.
woman, and I thought that she might be a candidate as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we've seen some very impressive young people who've come before us to testify.
The young diver who did the GPU.
The octopus?
Yeah, but I think he's probably older than 18.
Yeah, I think so. But all good ideas.
Madam Chair, this is Commissioner Caney.
Commissioner Caney?
Quick question for you, Joe, again. The workshop, a little bit more specifics of how long you think it might be or about what time, and just so that as we talk to the folks about this, we can give them a little idea of what we're thinking.
Yeah, Commissioner Keeney, I'm doing this on the fly, but what I was picturing was in the next, say, 2 months, we'd ask these young people to come in for a four-hour workshop during the course of the day. We could do it on a weekend if that would make it easier, but, you know, we'd spend maybe 4 hours. And the question before them would be to listen to some ideas that we would have about how to engage youth and give us feedback on the interest they think that that youth would have, how to talk about it, how to engage them. I had a couple of ideas of potential focus areas. One would be citizen science and characterization of various ecosystems for our priority habitat and species. Would there be interest in having a youth focus on that? Another might be the development of a statewide youth survey of outdoor things that people that age like to do. We might talk about staff or youth mentoring and education programs or youth volunteer corps. Those are some of the ideas that have been used or evaluated in other settings. And then I, you know, of course, before the workshop, would try to come up with a longer list. But have these kids come in. We would lay out what these programs might look like, and just get their sense of interest that teenagers would have, and you know, how to sort of roll them out and engage kids that age.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Commissioner Smith.
Commissioner Smith, yes.
I think Karen might have an idea or two as well. And
yes, regarding the teenagers who might be
right,
interested.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would, if logistically it works out time-wise, I would love to come down, and if adults are allowed, but I would like to come down and participate
mm-hmm.
in the day Very meeting.
Good.
Commissioner Smith, who was Karen?
Works with Miranda.
Yeah, Karen Dvornik from University of Washington. Yeah. She works with Chris Grew in the Fish and Wildlife Co-op Research Unit.
We've mentioned her off and on at different meetings, but very, very passionate about this and a good good sound partner as we move forward.
They may know of students who've been involved with Project CAT.
Right.
I think that has mainly involved older people than the age bracket you're talking about, but there might have been some younger people involved in that. But I think Karen could link you up with various other citizen science research projects that could lead you to some very engaged and well-educated students with ambitions to pursue natural resource careers.
And
I think that's what we're looking for, too.
Mike Town over at Redmond High, too. Who is a national leader and just an outstanding person.
Joe, this is Jay again. I was just trying to follow up with that. Would the kids coming in kind of have an opportunity then to think about possibly continuing to serve on a youth advisory board, or is that just not up in the air right now?
Well, Commissioner Keeney, the proposal that laid out had various check-in points. The first would be the scoping point, and then we would ask ourselves the question, okay, do we have enough here to form a larger group? And if the answer was yes, then I would assume that as long as you were still within the age range of 14 to 18, that those young people that were on the first group, you know, would be a good seeding, a good start for the larger group. But, you know, really, really I'm just putting this together almost as we speak.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
But you're doing it well, Joe.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, you're doing it very well. And we agreed as a commission that that the staff concerns over being overwhelmed and trying to do too much, be expected to do more than is feasible, we would address by agreeing that this is going to be a step-by-step process. So we're feeling our way through how we can accomplish some of these aims. And I think the deputy director did an excellent job of kind of winging it and explaining to everyone the first steps in this process.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And again, if you have names of individuals or like Karen, phone numbers, I'd love to have them.
Okay. And so think about it. Think about it, commissioners. If you know of any brilliant students who would like to engage in this, let the deputy director know. Okay, has Director Anderson returned yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Would you like to share with us what you know at this moment about the potential for shutdown? I hear they're getting closer to a budget deal.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Good morning. Welcome, Commissioner Holtzmiller. It was good to have a chance to talk to you, and look forward to working with you. I'm going to cover three topic areas. One is giving you an overview of our meeting that Commissioner Schmidt and I had with a couple of the tribal leaders, and kind of what we're thinking about in terms of next steps, and certainly invite Commissioner Schmidt to fill in the blanks. I also then will talk about the matter that you just referenced, and that has to do with status of the state budget for the next biennium and the work that the department's doing in terms of building a contingency plan for a shutdown of government effective midnight June 30th. And my third topic area will just be a bit of a brief update on some of the outstanding fish issues that we have relative to the North of Falcon process, preseason planning. So going back to the first topic is the meeting that Commissioner Schmidt and I had with Billy Frank, the chair of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission, Lorraine Loomis, who's the fisheries manager for the Swinomish Tribe, and Mike Graham, who is the executive director of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. And we met in Linwood last Thursday, and we spent about 3 hours together talking about the co-management, this kind of the state of co-management between the state and the tribes, and obviously in particular between the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the tribes. And I think there was a common belief that we need to try to do something to revitalize that relationship. We acknowledged that there's been a lot of change over the last 30 years since it started, and that it was time, and we felt like we were slipping in implementing co-management and probably gradually losing, or maybe in an accelerated way, losing some of the folks that understood what co-management, why it came about, what it's like to do business in the fish management world without it. And so just had some great discussions there, and I think came away with a common feeling, came to the table with a common feeling of a need to do something. I think there's a sense of urgency that was expressed by the participants around the table. And so what we came away with was a very rough outline of some next steps. And we were thinking about having a forum that would include tribal participation, of course, at the management level and some of their lead technical staff, and same for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, our managers, our key technical staff, along with the Fish and Wildlife Commissioners. In addition, on the tribal side, having some of their tribal, not just their natural resource, I don't mean to minimize the importance of their natural resource directors, but also having some tribal council people present, making sure that we have some of the policy and leadership of the tribes as part of the discussion. We conceptualized having a meeting with those types of participants and having it set up where we would have a panel approach. We discussed two panels, one that would have people like Billy, maybe we'd get Bill Wilkerson, Commissioner Schmitten, and maybe Jim Waldo. Haven't solidified the people specifically, but those are the kinds of people we were thinking about when co-management was kind of born under the leadership of Commissioner Schmitten and Bill Wilkerson and Bob Turner, and on the tribal side, people like Billy Frank, Lorraine Loomis, and other leaders, Ed Johnstone. We also, the second panel would look at having a description and discussion about the management requirements that are contained in court orders and our agreed-to plans. So we really set the foundation under which we work from a legal perspective as well as the agreed plans that we have. So since that meeting, I know that Mike had a commission meeting of the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission. He relayed to me that their commissioners, the words he used, were very enthusiastic about the proposal to begin with a large gathering like I described, and felt that that recommitting to co-management was an important step for us to try to take for the future of fish management in the Northwest. So we were looking at probably a venue that might be like at the Tulalip Casino, where there's a significant conference space that would hold a gathering like we're talking about. And there would be some a discussion about next steps in terms of how do we bring our stakeholders into this revitalization plan and have them receive some of the same kind of background that we're talking about having at this meeting. So some details to be worked out. Obviously, with this kind of an agenda, we're talking about at least a full day, if not a day and a half. So I'm going to be soliciting some ideas for dates that commissioners would be available, as well as our senior staff and technical folks here at the department. I want to forward those proposed dates on to Mike when I'm able to get those assembled, and work toward setting a date for this type of a meeting. So that's a kind of a summary of our discussion, what we talked about in terms of next steps on how we might go about revitalizing our co-management relationship. And I would also just end with saying that there was no assignment of blame. And I mean, they took as much responsibility for where we are today from a tribal perspective, tribal country, problems with within the tribal community as we did. So it was really an understanding that we both had work to do if we were going to have a successful co-management relationship on into the future. So I'll stop there. And Madam Chair, if I could ask Commissioner Schmitten if he'd like to fill in any of the blanks that I left out that would be important for you to know at this point.
Sure. Commissioner Schmitten, would you like to add your thoughts?
Thank you, Chair. I think the Treasurer's done a very good job. You know, I was particularly impressed with the meeting. Started with the usual initial venting of frustrations from both sides, and then went almost immediately into a very candid discussions of issues, as the director said, not pointing blame, accepting blame. Tribes indicated where many of their problems were occurring within their own community. And I can't remember that level of honesty for a long time. I think tribal concerns in general is that the federal government is not meeting their trust responsibility concerning salmon and steelhead. And their premise is that we are losing habitat at an alarming rate. Couple that with hatchery reductions does not paint a very good future for both of our fishing communities. And this should be, in their view, a shared concern, and we should be working together to address those issues. And I wasn't prepared to go into a lot of detail. We went through a lot of specifics, touching on enforcement, shellfish, catch accountability, north of Falcon, with a very good give and take. Tribes ask who the tribes should be dealing with, directly with the commission, with the director. Based on our discussion as commission, I indicated that the director did speak for the commission unless otherwise noted. Talked about the possibility of resuming the annual co-management meetings. We introduced the guest sharing information issue that's very important to the commission. I spent quite a bit of time on that. They indicated they had similar concerns from their point of view, gave some specifics, one, waiting for the recreational catch reporting for 2 years is a problem that they see, and the need for recreational catch accountability within the Skagit sockeye fishery, which is just now developing. Those were kind of minor, but that's the type of issues that anything could be put on the table. I think the big item to come out, the director is doing a good job in indicating that's setting up some sort of meeting or conference with staffs and commissions from both communities to look at co-management, look at the history, the context and meaning of co-management, and is underlining avoiding returning to management through the courts, which was my experience many, many years ago. The list of speakers, we did note Dr. Whitney from the University of Washington, who was the first Bolt technical advisor, maybe one that has some interest as well. There was a request of the department to consider joining in opposition that NOAA has done to a riparian buffer letter from the egg industry to members of the Washington delegation, basically saying enough is enough. Those are some of the detailed issues I remember. I have put together some meeting notes that perhaps at our next meeting we can even go into more details, and certainly with the Fish Commission or Fish Committee. That's all I would add.
Okay. Dr. Anderson, was your expectation that this meeting would involve all commissioners and therefore be an open public meeting, or was your thought that we should have less than a quorum?
Well, I, Madam Chair, I would first like to have you consider having it be for that all commissioners would attend and talk to Bill Freymeyer about, you know, what needs to be done in order for that to occur, understanding that understanding the type of meeting that this would be. But yeah, I guess, and I'd also defer to Commissioner Schmitten, but my desire would be to have it available to all commissioners.
Okay. Thank you. That does change the level of candor usually that people feel comfortable with.
Understand, but at the same time, you know, the panel's kind of approach to this is more of a information, education, opportunity to try to get everybody on the same page with the same basic understandings of how it evolved, where it came from, what our obligations are to each other currently under court orders or agreed-to plans. So it's not so much as a getting into the individual issues that we have as it is to getting us all in the same place or understanding about the basis for co-management and what our responsibilities to each other are.
Great. It sounds very useful. Starting off from a very positive standpoint of wanting to revitalize and reconsider why it was so important to establish a good, healthy co-management relationship. So that makes perfect sense. So what time frame were we thinking here?
Well, sometime, at least for Mike, from the tribes, sometime after August 20th. So that leaves a fair amount of room, but see if we can try to get it done sometime before the end of September, I guess, would be.
And the commission does not have a face-to-face meeting in September, I think.
Right. So
did we set aside a date in September that we would all commit to be available if we wanted to have a meeting, Tammy? Do you remember?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right.
I'll send out some dates and or have Tammy send out some dates, and we'll see if we can get a couple of different options that might work at least for the majority of folks. And then I'll convey those to, forward those on to Mike and see if we can get a date nailed down in the next couple of weeks.
And you said that they'd offered to provide the venue?
I suggested the venue be at the Tulalip Casino. Tulalip. How we would go about sharing the cost of the venue is yet to be worked out.
Okay. Sounds really very good. Good to hear you had such a productive meeting. So the other items you wanted to bring
up? Yes. So the next item is budget contingency planning, which has and continues to take an enormous amount of staff time. I had the commission office provide the commissioners a copy of a staff message that I sent out. I think it was yesterday. Yesterday was one of those days that wouldn't end. We were directed by the governor's office, the chief of staff, Mary Alice Hushel, to develop a contingency plan for state operations in the event that the legislature failed to pass a 13-15 operating and capital budget by July 1. And not trying to tell you stuff you already know, but any expenditures that we would do as an agency, we need to have those expenditures authorized by the legislature, almost regardless of fund source, with some exceptions. But for the most part, 95%+ of our funding is authorized through the adoption of a budget, whether it's federal funds, local funds, license fee dollars, or certainly general funds. They gave us guidelines under which we would develop our contingency plan. They were in four categories. Three of the four were pertinent to us. The first one that was not was services funded. Well, I'd say that was a bit of a caveat. The services funded by appropriations that are in the already enacted transportation budget. We do receive some funding from DOT, and there's a question mark as to whether we would be able to expend those funds for department activities, but there is a small amount of money there. I think it's $250,000 or something like that, twice that, I'm being told. The three categories that we focused on were the next one was services that do not require an appropriation, so non-appropriated funds. And in our plan, our contingency plan that we provided to the governor's office yesterday, Wednesday, was we have three non-appropriated funds. One is the Rockfish Research Account. There's approximately four FTEs funded by this non-appropriated account. We would have the option of continuing the work that's done by those four FTEs in the event that a budget was not passed. The second one is a Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead Endorsement Account. We have about 22 FTEs that are funded by this account, plus an additional three enforcement officers. And those staff are used to monitor and analyze data necessary to conduct our recreational fisheries, meet our ESA permit requirements in the Columbia Basin. So that when we get to the issue of fishery closures, the use of this funding might allow us to keep a few fisheries open in the Columbia River that use this account to support them. The third and final one is the Coastal Crab account. There's two FTEs that are funded by this non-appropriated account, and their primary duties are associated with catch accounting in our Coastal Dungeness crab fishery and catch or sampling at the dock relative to looking at shell condition, particularly as we move into the summer portion of the fishery. So those are the three non-appropriated accounts that we have that we would still be able to expend revenue or have expenditures against those accounts in the event that we had a shutdown. The second category is work that's mandated under federal law or is required by the U.S. Constitution for the state to do. When we submitted our original plan on Wednesday, we only were able to identify one, and we had a lot of discussion about a number of the federal activities, and to be clear that having a federal contract does not in and of itself qualify under this category. So the only one that we were able to identify on Wednesday was our activities in participation in the Columbia River Compact. And it was only for the purpose of adopting Treaty Indian commercial salmon fisheries and the subsequent rulemaking that is done by the Department of Fish and Wildlife that allows tribal fishers to legally sell their catch to non-Indian fish buyers. It would not, activities that are associated with making decisions about non-Indian fisheries would not fall under this work as being required or mandated under federal law. I'm going to come back to that category in just a moment, but the last category that we looked at was the category to protect public safety or prevent catastrophic loss of state property. We originally had five or six items under this category, things like maintenance of our hatcheries so that we wouldn't be walking away from our 83 hatcheries and shutting off the pumps and no longer feeding those fish. Obviously, those fish are going to die relatively quickly after we were to walk away from them. We invest somewhere in the order of $32 million a year in our hatcheries. We raise and release somewhere around 170 million fish. Not all those fish, you know, we have released some of the fish. I just took a ballpark number that we've got 100 million fish in those 83 facilities that we're feeding and caring for right now. It was my judgment that if we walked away from those, that it would come under the category of a catastrophic loss of state property. After the governor's office attorneys looked at that, they did not agree, and so that particular category that we had for retaining somewhere on the order of 256 FTEs or so to keep those facilities going was eliminated from our list, from our contingency plan. Pygmy rabbits was another one. We've got captive, held in semi-captive conditions, pygmy rabbits. Again, we walk away from those animals will likely die. Those were also eliminated from our list. And another significant category was our enforcement officers. We propose to keep our enforcement officers on under the category of to protect public safety. It was determined that because the state patrol and presumably local sheriff's jurisdictions and enforcement capacity would still be on the ground, that it was not necessary to have our officers continue. So that category was stricken. They did allow us And believe me, they didn't do this for everybody, but after a lot of discussion with them, they did allow us, and this is in a conversation that was between myself and the chief of staff and their lead attorneys, we could retain up to two FTEs for answering phones that were associated with emergencies. For example, if we had a cougar in maybe downtown Vancouver, or we had some type of a issue that we had certain expertise to bring to respond to an emergency, that then we could turn around and get authorization from the governor to have, you know, whatever the number of staff from the Department of Fish and Wildlife that would be needed to address that emergency, that we could do that. So this particular category of public safety and preventing catastrophic loss is one that there's a fair amount of gray area in terms of whether it's required under the Constitution, or whether, so the threshold, as you can hear, for services to meet this particular category was really high to get over. And there are very, very few activities in any of the state agencies that met the threshold. Following our submission of that plan, we continued to work on the hatchery piece. I have to say, the walking away from the hatcheries was the area that I had the biggest concern about and the greatest misgivings about. And so our attorneys continued to work, and I brought up the issue associated with those fish that are come under the purview of the Endangered Species Act. Those species, those hatcheries that are within distinct population or evolutionary significant units that are listed, and that if we walk away from those and allow those fish to die, that doesn't that constitute a take under the Endangered Species Act, a take for which we have no authority, we have no permitting, we have no take authorizations for. And so the attorneys continued to look at that question and appreciate all the help that our AGs gave us, because they provided me the necessary legal opinions that helped support an argument that I took back to the governor's office yesterday that was founded on the need for us to continue our hatchery operations that were that had listed fish in them, fish where we are not marking some of those fish in order to give us a replication of what is happening to the listed fish that are naturally spawning, and suggested that we needed to retain up to 80 FTEs to keep those facilities going. I got an affirmative reaction from OFM and the governor's office yesterday. So late yesterday afternoon, we added that to our contingency plan. Subsequent to that, I received some additional information from the AG's office that may give us the ability to add to the suite of hatcheries that we were considering under the 80 FTE criteria, and so there may be an opportunity to amend our plan as a result of some additional considerations and analysis that the fish program's doing today. The other area that so on the hatchery piece, if you can, you know, just imagine the worst case scenario where we wouldn't be able to expend any state funds to keep our hatcheries going. Therefore, we'd have to lay off all our hatchery staff. Therefore, we wouldn't have any care and feeding of the fish and eggs that are in those hatcheries, and we would lose all of that if we walked away from that for any expended period of time, even a short period of time. So we're also looking at the potential of engaging volunteers or other government entities, including tribal entities, that perhaps could come in and ensure that those facilities continued to function at a minimum level during the time period when a government shutdown was in place. The other area that I'd speak to is that of our fisheries. Of course, we have a number of fisheries that have just started or are about to begin, everything from salmon to Puget Sound crab. All of those fisheries require a level of monitoring, of sampling, of enforcement, of catch accounting in order to meet either management plans or state tribal management plans, or to meet our requirements for monitoring and collection of coded wire tag information, catch accounting where we have quotas that those fisheries are managed under. Maybe we have bag limits for fisheries, and now we have no enforcement out on the ground as a result of all of our enforcement officers being subject to a temporary layoff. So a lot of our attention has been put toward building a contingency for shutting down the majority of our fisheries that we have ongoing, and those closures would be effective July 1. Well, so how do you go about doing that? How do you go about providing adequate public notice? When do you have to pull the trigger, if you will, to notify the public that as of July 1, those fisheries will be closed? We can't wait until June 30th to do that, so we would need to do that toward the middle or the end of next week to provide adequate public notice for those individuals that would be traveling to those areas to participate in those fisheries. So we're building. We have been, the fish program spent all day yesterday, in addition to the work associated with hatcheries, of looking at fisheries, looking at which ones would be subject to closure, which ones have, in particular, an enforcement component, that without that enforcement component, those fisheries can't take place, and obviously those that need catch accounting and sampling and monitoring. So the list of fisheries that would close is very long and includes most of the fisheries that we would otherwise have ongoing as of July 1. There are some assessments and analysis that go through with those fisheries that are going on in federal waters. So if we look just on the coastal fisheries, where we have three different categories, we have state-managed fisheries that are state-licensed, so like Dungeness crab, pink shrimp, spot prawns, razor clams, not those seasons are over, but or our baitfish fisheries. All of those are state-managed and state-licensed, even though either all or a portion of them take place in federal waters. The other category is federally managed and state-licensed, so those fisheries like salmon, sardines, our recreational fisheries for halibut, bottomfish, salmon, albacore are all in the category of federal, under a federal management plan, but the participants are licensed by the state, not by the federal government. And then the third category is the federally managed and federally licensed. There aren't a lot of those, but groundfish fisheries is one of them. The individual fishery quota program, the sablefish fishery, both the primary and the daily trip limit fisheries, the commercial albacore fishery, and the commercial directed halibut fishery. But even though they're federally licensed, they also require a state delivery permit in order to deliver those fish into a state port, where catch accounting again comes into play, and so does enforcement, and we would not have the capacity to do either of those things. So the complexity of the issue, both in terms of the federal versus state licensed versus state managed, the complexity of shutting down recreational fisheries, the public notice issues to go with doing all of that, and building a contingency plan to prepare for the government shutdown, as you can probably understand, is a huge task that we've undertaken. We have I've communicated with the tribes about this situation in an email yesterday. We held a conference call with our sport advisors yesterday to brief them on this particular situation that we're in. The governor's office released all of our contingency plans for all agencies yesterday. So this is, and is so in particular, I mean, Seattle Times and other news sources have picked this up. And one of the things that they focused on in the Times article of the impacts was a particular focus on hatchery operations coming to a close as well as fishery closures. So that is out there. And of course, staff. I mean, communicating with staff, as you saw through our emails, we've done that a couple of times. We've met with our senior leadership numerous times to try to prepare for this. The whole issue of the work that's done in the last 2 weeks of June, our employees receive compensation on July 10th for that work, and if there's a government shutdown on June 30th, how are they going to get paid for the work that they've already done in the last 2 weeks of June? So some of those kind of logistical problems and concerns, what about health benefits, how does this affect pensions, all of those issues are out there and concerns for our employees. So trying to manage those issues is also a challenge. I've spent a fair amount of time in what I refer to as across the street, meeting with legislators in the last few days. I continue to be reassured by leaders in the legislature that they're going to have a budget resolution. A lot of discussion and pointing to Sunday as the day. They're going to be working over the weekend. They indicate that they're making progress, closing the gap between the House and the Senate, and in particular the House and the Senate Republicans. There are two, I mean, there's the budget issues and then there's the policy issues that have divided them. We did have a positive revenue forecast that came out on the 18th, the 18th, where there was additional $330 million of revenue between a reduction in caseload expenditures in addition to additional revenue as a result of additional sales tax collections and B&O collections. So that helped narrow the gap in terms on the budget side, but there were still these kind of key fundamental policy issues that divided them. So they continue their work. Obviously, we're all hopeful, and we're getting hopeful indications from them that they will reach a budget conclusion, and so we won't have to follow through and implement any of these contingencies plans. But on, you know, that said, there's a lot of work going in to the development of those contingency plans in the event that it comes to pass. So that's an overview to the best of my ability on where we are on budget and contingency planning for the potential of them not reaching agreement by June 30th.
Thank you. Consequences are very serious, far-reaching, disturbing, ominous, and I just feel badly that we have to go through those. This is a lot of work to put together this contingency plan, and all with the greatest hope that it's never going to be used. So, commissioners, do you have any questions for the director?
Commissioner Smith, just a pat on the back for you, Phil. I know this, doing all this on top of the day-to-day work is yeoman's duty. So appreciate your leadership.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, and believe me, I'm just there's a whole bunch of people behind me, Joe Storr and Jim Scott and Nate Pamplin and Bruce Bjork and Lisa Venoroso and others that have been working really hard on this. And our, I have to say, our AGs have been right there with us, looking for every opportunity for us to continue our activities. So, but I appreciate that.
Thanks. Other commissioners have any questions? Okay, well, hey, just keep us informed.
Yep. And my last category is some of the outstanding fishery issues coming out of North Falcon. First, relative to the Willapa Bay commercial fishery, the CR 102 was filed on June 19th, which was Wednesday. We have a public hearing scheduled for July 23rd. This leaves us a couple of weeks to prepare our concise explanatory statement, and then I'll be meeting with Jim and Ron Warren to hopefully finalize that and have a CR 103 filed on or about August 13th. Grace Harbor, we're planning to file the 102 on July 3rd. We don't have a hearing for that scheduled yet, but we will soon. As part of our plan this year, we're have a tangle net, use of tangle net gear to try to provide some additional opportunity for coho, understanding that our Chinook populations are just slightly above the escapement goal. We've had a lot of discussion around what the mortality rate we should use for tangle net gear in that area should be. And at the present time, we are planning to use a 25% mortality rate, which is obviously higher than what we use in the Columbia River, but given that we haven't had specific tests for mortality rates using tangle net gear in Grace Harbor where water conditions are different, it's going to be this fishery would occur in October. We don't know what the freshets rainfall resulting from rainfall would be that would influence water temperature. We wanted to take a more precautionary approach in terms of the mortality rate that we assume for Chinook that are released in that fishery. Commercial advisors are not happy with that we're using a higher rate, so we're continuing to work with them and working the model to through some additional possible alternatives schedules while staying within the same level of impact. We will, for both Willapa and Grace Harbor, we will likely have to open those under using our emergency regulation process, given that we won't have the 103 while filed doesn't become effective for 30 days after the date it's filed, and so that puts us into September. And in particular, with respect to Willapa, we have some fishing opportunity prior to that time. The other two areas that are outstanding are the sport fishery and the Puyallup River. I was up and met with the Puyallup Tribal Council on May 23rd, but it might have been a little bit later than that. We weren't able to come to agreement. They're continuing to ask for closure dates of the recreational fishery that go beyond what I feel is appropriate. I provided them a letter yesterday with our management intent, which does include a significant number of days that are closed in the months of September and October, or the first 2 weeks of October, and basically closing the days that we anticipate that the tribal fishery will be in place. We have had a increasing incidence of conflict when we're trying to have the tribal fishery occur on the same days that we have recreational fisheries. and trying to address that. There's also a need for us to have some additional restrictions during that time frame to reduce the exploitation rate on these fish to stay within our ESA guideline. So I'll be awaiting a response from the Puyallup tribe to our proposal. The Muckleshoot tribe also has treaty rights on the in the upper portion of the river. They also asked us to close some much more extensive days than we have previously. In our proposal, we did add a few days, but certainly not the number of days that we have closed in the area that's adjacent to the Puyallup Reservation. So we continue to work that particular issue without and don't have a resolution yet. The other and last outstanding area is the Skokomish recreational fishery in the Skokomish River. Pat Patillo continues to work and meet with the tribal officials on that. You may recall that they had passed a tribal resolution that would require that any recreational fishery that occurred in the Skokomish River on or adjacent to reservation, that they would need a license or permit issued by the Skokomish tribe. And so there's obviously issues associated with that. And as well as we have not agreed on a fishery schedule. So Pat's continuing, as I said, to work with the tribe on that, and to date we don't have a resolution on that fishery, but we're still working on it, and obviously time is growing short in order for us to try to resolve that. So that was the last category. It's been an exceptionally busy June. So there's a bunch of other stuff that I've been working on that I won't bore you with unless you have specific questions about other areas of activities or the ones that I've addressed.
Never boring, I can assure you that. Commissioners, any questions about what the director has presented or other topics? I think we're quiet because we're just overwhelmed with the complexity of the issues that you've been dealing with on top of the contingency planning that's underway. So very appreciative.
Thank you.
Very appreciative. Commissioners, anything else to bring forward? Been an unusually long conference call. Anyone still there? I assume you're all there. Okay. I hear no other topics to consider, so I think it's time to adjourn and allow staff to get back to their very important work. So thank you all. Thanks to our director and his staff for all the excellent work you've been doing.
I'll second truly, that. Yep.
Truly impressive. So have a good weekend. Those of you will have a weekend. And we'll talk with you soon.
Thank you.
Everyone.
Yep.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.